Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This summer, we've been taking some time to look back at some of our previous conversations with some great guests. And this week, we're going to visit our conversation with Dr. John Lowry. John is a recognized authority on negotiation. And his background includes being a lawyer, management consultant, entrepreneur, and negotiation coach. We're going to be discussing his book entitled Negotiation Made Simple, A Practical Guide for Solving Problems, Building Relationships, and Delivering the Deal. I know you'll enjoy our conversation today with John. Could you give us a little bit of your background for those that are new to our podcast and who didn't listen to our first conversation?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So I'm a lawyer by background. I know that's not necessarily the greatest place to start with some people. They're like, oh, goodness, here we go. Another talking head lawyer, right? But that is my background, and that's what led me down the negotiation path. And now I serve as CEO of Thrivence, which is a management consulting company based in Nashville, Tennessee, that does a lot of leadership strategy, and we're beginning to do some work in the AI space, helping business leaders think about what AI is all about. And then I also spent some time doing professional negotiation through another company I have called the Lowry Group, and work with people doing a lot of training, but then also in the trenches, representing different organizations and negotiations, trying to help deals get put together and problems to get solved. And so I spend a lot of my time around this process, whether doing it or thinking about it or helping others become better at it, and just have great fun watching people use it to be able to accomplish the things that they want to accomplish in life. And that's really fulfilling.
So I've read your new book, and the title is Negotiation Made Simple, and the subtitle is Practical Guide for Solving Problems, Building Relationships, and Delivering the Deal. Talk a little bit. And I, after reading this book, I thought, I wish I would have had this when I had teenagers. my girls are growing now, but negotiation is a part of everybody's life. And but I think most people think, oh, I'm not a great negotiator. But talk a little bit about just the idea around it, and kind of what was your goal for writing this book?
My goal for writing the book was really to try to take this process that can be very, very complex and to give people just a simple framework in which they can place every single negotiation, and to take all of the literature out there, all of the research out there, and try to figure out how in a couple of hours can I give someone a package to where if that's all they dedicate towards their negotiation skills, that we can at least give them a framework that they can follow in order to generate better outcomes using this process. And then really to help people understand that a lot of what they do in life is negotiation. And so you just described it, raising kids, it's a big negotiation. Being married is a big negotiation. Leading people at work is a big negotiation. Putting deals together from a sales standpoint, big negotiation. I mean, everything, if you really reduce it down, we negotiate everywhere in life. And so one of the things that I hope to do with this book is to help people understand that they are a negotiator and they will negotiate. You can't avoid it. And so you may as well think about how to do it most strategically, because it also is the process that helps us get what we want in life. And that's one of the things that, you know, I think a lot of people, they've got great ambitions, they've got great desires, but they don't know how to do it. Part of the challenge that they experience is they don't know how to negotiate. They don't know how to put deals together and solve problems that keep them from doing the things they're called to do and the things they're meant to do. So my hope is this book is a tool that will help them think strategically about how to manage the process that is going to lead them to the success that they're looking to achieve.
So give us, you have a definition of negotiation in the book. Why don't you summarize that for us of what negotiation means?
Sure. Well, I define negotiation as a strategic communication process to get a deal or to solve a problem. And oftentimes when I'm doing keynote speeches or I'm training, I'll ask the audience to literally reflect back on their last week. And I'll say, think about every email, think about every meeting, think about every Zoom call, every interaction that you have with people. Like, how much of that could you fit into this definition of a strategic communication process to get a deal or to solve a problem? And most of the time, people will shout out numbers, and those numbers will be anywhere from 60% to 90% to 100% to 75%, but they're almost always above 50. And so I think, especially for someone that's managing people or managing a significant part of a business, the reality is that you're going to spend well over half your time engaged in this process. The word negotiation comes from the Latin root, which is negotiatus, and that means to carry on business. Like, this is the process that is used to carry on business. And as a result of that, people are engaged in it all of the time. And so I'll have people in my trainings or in my audiences, I'll have them pull out a business card and scratch out their title, whatever that title is, and write on their business card, professional negotiator. Because I think most people are actually professional negotiators. That's the process that they're going to use to be successful in whatever role that they are in for whatever company or organization that they work for.
And I know you... the statistic, less than 10% of professionals have had any training. And a lot of our listeners are new leaders or first-time CEOs, and they're having to do a lot of negotiation, whether it's with employees around salary, a lot of different, you know, as you mentioned, daily, it's a big part of their job. Talk about, is if you were to coach somebody, they had a big conversation that was coming up that they were going to have to negotiate, and you were to give them some coaching, you were in their ear for maybe had a half hour to kind of set up that next conversation. What are some key things that you would recommend to them? And I love the whole framework around you have to be strategic in those conversations.
I mean, what I'd probably do is if I had 30 minutes with someone to help them get ready for a negotiation, in the book, I have this thing called the negotiation preparation tool, which is one page in which you can prepare for a negotiation. And then in the book, along with that tool, is about 20-something questions to ask that will help someone prepare for a negotiation. And so what I would do is I would take them through that process, because that process, even if you know nothing about negotiation, just by answering those questions, just by filling out that tool, you will prepare yourself for the strategic moments that are coming to you in that big negotiation. And so the first thing really starts with identifying who are the parties and what are the issues, and thinking about, okay, who's involved in this negotiation, who's impacted by this negotiation. And then the issues are, what are the questions that have to get resolved? What are the questions that have to get answered for the deal to get done or the problem to go away, whatever it is that we're trying to negotiate? And so once you get those identified, now you've got a kind of a sense of what you're dealing with there. And then what I have people do is I have them think through about what are the alternatives if they're not able to negotiate a deal. What are the alternatives for you? What are the alternatives for the other side? Because this is the beginning of building leverage in terms of understanding what the alternatives are. If you don't have very good alternatives, you're not going to have as much leverage as you need at the table. If the other side doesn't have good alternatives, then you've got an opportunity to really leverage that. And then I ask people to think about what's the most likely alternative. So think broadly in terms of all the different things that could happen, but then think very critically in terms of saying, what is the most likely thing to happen? Now, once you know what that is, now you're able to develop your bottom line. And your bottom line is the place you will only go if it means you get a deal. It's kind of your last ditch effort to put a deal together in terms of the value that you're giving and the value you're looking for in return. And so I'll have people think about that in terms of, okay, what is the most I'm willing to give to make this deal happen? And what do I need to get in return for it? And then once you've established that, now it's the time to begin thinking about where do we want to start? And so you start framing an opening offer by thinking about where you want to end, and that should direct where you want to begin. And so identifying ideally where we want to end. The bottom line is not where we want to end. That's where we will end, but that's not where we want to. Coming up with the ideal outcome, that's helpful then in terms of saying, okay, where do I need to start in terms of delivering or providing the best chance to deliver that deal at the ideal outcome. And that then can kind of guide people in saying, okay, where do I need to start? Where do I think the other side's going to start? And then from there, you kind of map out the dance. And the dance is kind of the back and forth. If I start here, what do I think their next move is going to be? What would be my next move? And you just kind of map out this process. Now, the value of this is not that you're right, because it's almost never the case that you are exactly right. The value of this is you are anticipating the strategic moments that you need to manage well in order to use this process to drive the outcome you desire. And so that really sets up what I call kind of the competitive negotiation. And then in addition to that, I would also have people say, okay, let's step back for just a second. We kind of know where that conversation is going to go. And sometimes it'll lead to a deal and sometimes it won't. That's the reality, is that sometimes we don't find kind of a meet in the middle kind of place. Their bottom line and our bottom line are too far apart. And so it's really important then that you step back and you also have a conversation of saying, okay, what is it that they really want? And what is it that I really want? And that's not like the substantive thing. Well, you know, they want to sell the units at $2.56 a piece. Really, that's stepping back and saying, like, personally, what are they trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. And so if it's a sales context and a sales negotiation, you know, that person wants to look good for their boss, or that person wants to qualify for their bonus at the end of the year. I mean, there's a lot of things personally they're trying to do through this deal. And the more that we can kind of understand that, the better and the more power that we have in terms of coming up with some creative solutions. And then once we kind of understand, and that may be a process to where we have to ask some questions to better understand that. I talk in the book about being a learn-it-all negotiator. And this is the learn-it-all part right here, to where, okay, I know what the numbers are. I know what the substance is. But now I've got to go and I've got to dip into the human element of this process, because negotiation always happens between people, even though they represent organizations or governmental entities or whatever. It's always between people. So you can't remove the human element. We've got to prepare for it and embrace it. And then once you understand those things, then you're at a place to where you can get creative in terms of how to respond to them. And this is all laid out on one sheet of paper, to where you can literally go through that whole preparation process, write it out from your perspective, from the other side's perspective. And by doing that, it can be worth millions and millions of dollars for people. I remember one particular training, I presented this whole thing. And after the training was over, there was a group of about five people that gathered in the corner of the room. They had one of these out and they were working through it. And I was eager to get out of there, so I kind of left. And the CEO called me about 3 weeks later, and he just said, you know, we just struck the biggest deal in company history. He said, we were negotiating it as all of our people went through your negotiation course. He said, right after the course ended, we went to the back corner of the room and we worked through this tool. And he said, by working through this tool, we recognized that we could ask for 50% of the deal as opposed to 33% of the deal. That's, in fact, what we asked for, and we achieved it. And the difference between the 33% and the 50% was $14 million for the company. Wow. And so that's the kind of power that, if you prepare properly, there is a lot of value to be captured in terms of working through that process and being ready for the negotiation.
So as you're thinking about somebody maybe that you haven't met before and you're having to face them, you don't know how they operate. And you said there's the competitive versus cooperative style. How do you figure out, is there a way to figure out pretty quickly how a person operates and what's important to them? Because you've said that if they're competitive, trying to be cooperative is not going to be a good outcome. How would you figure out somebody quickly? Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, so that's always part of the uncertainty, is especially when you're negotiating with people you don't know, you don't know how they're going to approach the deal. And at times you can, try to network a little bit and find someone who knows them and get some intel. There's all those different ways to do it. But if you're truly sitting down with someone that you don't know, it really involves a lot of monitoring and observation. And so for this particular moment, where there's that uncertainty at play, there's a game theory professor out of the University of Michigan named Robert Axelrod that came up with this little four-step approach in terms of how to manage those moments of uncertainty and avoid exploitation. And so what he said was, the first thing is to kind of start cooperatively, but I would add, but don't risk very much. You just want to see if you can get the cooperative path moving and to see if you can invite them into cooperation with you, because if you can, that's your better path to a deal. But if they're competitive and they don't reciprocate, then Axelrod says you've got to respond in kind, which means even though you may want to be cooperative, you may have to become competitive at that moment, because you've realized you got a competitive person on the other side and they're going not for a win-win, they're going for a single win, and it's theirs, not yours. And so in those moments, you're going to have to be competitive or you'll get exploited, you'll lose. If they're cooperative in response to your cooperation, that's great. Keep being cooperative. See if you can make it happen. And then a third step, Axelrod says, is you've got to be willing to forgive. Because what will happen is, if you manage this right and you start cooperatively, they come back with competition, you're disciplined enough to be competitive in the next move, and they say, I don't want to be competitive. Like, I want to win. I don't want to lose. And they start being cooperative. That's where Axelrod says, you got to forgive them. You got to go back to cooperation with them now that you've got them there, as opposed to looking to retaliate against them for the fact that they tried to compete early in the process. And then the last thing Axelrod says that I think is really valuable here is you have to be clear and consistent. And so the two messages that I think you need to send to the other side that is going to incentivize them to be cooperative with you and help build trust in this process between you and the other side, the two messages are these. Number one is, if they are going to be competitive, you will be competitive too. Like, they have to understand that. Right. But they also have to understand that if you are going to be cooperative, or if they are going to be cooperative, you will be cooperative also. And if they understand that if they're competitive, you're competitive, they're cooperative, you're cooperative, then you set up the best possible chance of them being incentivized to be cooperative with you, which can lead to good things. And so in those moments where you don't know who you're negotiating with, if you'll follow those four steps, it'll protect you, but it'll also give you the best path to get a good deal with that person.
You shared a story about going and purchasing a car. I heard you have talked about this story. Give that illustration of somebody going in to negotiate and kind of your how you work through it and kind of your response to the person that was selling the car.
Sure. Yeah, this is a true story. And this was one of the experiences I had in my first couple of times buying a car. And this was a moment where my wife and I had both finished graduate school. We were kind of living that stage of life where we were dinks. We were double income, no kids. And we were finally at a place where we could afford a new car. It seemed like it took forever to get there, but we finally got there. So my wife said she had this old 1991 Honda Accord that had like 200,000 miles on it. That thing was so tired. And she was like, "You think we could get a new car now?" And I was like, "Yes, let's go get a new car." She had already picked it out. She wanted this little Acura. And so I was the negotiator, right? And so I was like, "Let me handle this. I got this." And so I call a bunch of dealerships and kind of work through this process of saying, you know, the dealership that gives me the lowest price over the phone, that's where I'm going to go negotiate the deal. If the deal's not done, I'm just going to show up that afternoon to go see if I can't put the deal together there. So I show up at this dealership and I walk in and I've told my wife, I'm like, "Listen, this is going to be a bloodbath. Okay. Like this is going to be, you know, this is going to be cutthroat because they're going to want, you know, they're going to fight hard. We're going to fight hard. It's going to take a long time. We're going to be really tired, but at the end of the day, we're going to walk out with a great deal." And so I've got her all prepped, ready to go. So we walk into this dealership and I meet this salesperson or sales manager that I've been talking to over the phone. And I say, "Listen, you know, you're best price in town. Congratulations." I said, "But here's the catch." I said, "You know, you got a dealership down the street, one of your competitors that say that this is a total bait and switch, that you brought me in by giving me this number, but you've got all these fees and things to where this is not really the number for the car. This is just baiting me in here. And then it's actually, I'm going to pay more to buy the car from you as opposed to your competitor down the street." And so I said, "In order for us to kind of move forward, I'm going to need another $500 off the price of the car." And so he's like, "All right, well, give me a second." So he disappears for a while and comes back and he says, "Mr. Lowry, if it means we can get your business today, I can give you another $500 off the price of the car." And I said, "Okay, well, great." So I was like, that was kind of easy. And my wife was like, "All right, what's the problem? Buy the car. Let's go home." Like, you know. And so I was like, "All right, well, but hold on. We got other parts of this deal we got to talk about." I said, "I got this old Honda. It's like, it's tired, but I need $3,000 out of this old Honda." And he's like, "All right, well, let me go appraise it." And he goes out and does his thing and all that. He comes back, says, "Mr. Lowry, you know, that old Honda is not worth $3,000. But if we can get your business today, we can find a way. We'll get you $3,000 for that old Honda." So I was like, "All right, like, interesting, kind of easy." And so my wife's like, "What's the problem? Like, let's go do the deal." I was like, "All right, hold on. There's one more piece of the deal." I was like, "I got to finance, I don't know, $10,000 of this new car. I've already been pre-approved by the credit union. But, you know, if you guys can beat it, we can do the deal today. If not, I got to wait till next week to get the funds and all that." So he's like, "All right, well, fill out the credit application." And I did. And he comes back and he says, "Mr. Lowry, with your credit, we can finance you at 4.3%. I know you've got 4.7% from the credit union. Are you ready to do the deal?" Now I've got a problem, because my problem is I got nothing left to talk about. And he said yes to everything that I wanted. And so he's just being cooperative and getting a deal done, which is great. My wife is like, "I don't know what's so hard about this. Like, do the deal." But me, as a competitive negotiator, there's something dreadfully wrong here. And that is that this is supposed to be hard. They're supposed to say no. And instead, they're saying yes. And here's what I want people to catch, is that in that process of saying yes, he actually started making me nervous that I wasn't getting a good deal because it was way too easy for him. And so I'm now stuck. And so I tell my wife to take a look at this accessories book and to pick something out of the book. And she's like, "We don't need any of this stuff." And I was like, "I don't care. It's not about the stuff. I just need him to say no so that I have the feeling that we're getting a great deal." And so she picked out the trunk mat. And so I told this guy, I got out of the trunk mat. So I kid you not, 5 minutes later, he comes walking out with the trunk mat. He puts it on the table And he says, Mr. Lowry, here's your trunk mat. Are we ready to do the deal? And I was like, oh my goodness, I cannot get a no. So finally she picks out the fog lights on the car. And I was like, oh, got to have the fog lights. And so he's like, you got to be kidding me. And now he's getting frustrated and angry that this is so difficult. So finally he comes back and he's like, Mr. Lowry, here's the deal on the fog lights. He goes, it's a $700 job. I got to pull a bumper off that car, put it back on. He's like, but I'll do it for $350 if you buy the car today. And so in that moment, I got half of what I wanted. And what I needed was a no. And it's ironic, right? Because, you know, it's all about getting them to say yes. Well, there are moments where when we think about the psychological aspect of negotiation, there are moments where actually the no is really valuable. Because the no sends the signal to the other side that they have gotten the best deal that they are going to get. And for people like me that are competitive, that's what I need to know before I'm ready to say yes and do the deal. And so an ironic, surprising kind of negotiation at a car dealership to where they actually weren't aggressive enough to give me the psychological satisfaction that I needed.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You talk about having good manners of negotiation. Talk about that, and kind of as people are again the competitive portion of it, but it really is about people. And you know, I'm thinking today's world, a lot of companies are struggling with retention. There's always that next better offer that's out there for employees. But talk about that as far as a leader, just how you need to take a look at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it flows right out of this story. And, you know, I would suggest that the good manners of negotiation from a negotiator standpoint is actually to lament the deal, to not make it too easy and to not be too excited about it. Because that sends the signal to the other side that there was more to get, and that if you're really excited, that they shouldn't be excited. And so in those moments to where even if it is the best deal that you've ever struck, the good manners are still to be like, wow, Mark, you got the upper hand on this one, my friend. And to let you and to make you feel like you got a great deal too. And that's really important with customers because you want them coming back and you want them feeling like they got a great deal. And so if you don't manage their psychology appropriately, then all of a sudden you can make them feel such to where they're never coming back again because they feel like you ripped them off or they feel like they didn't get good value. And so the manners are really, really important. And sometimes the reality is it's a great deal for you, but you got to be disciplined and careful not to show it. And sometimes, even though you can say yes, it makes sense to demonstrate some struggle, to be like, oh, Mark, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that. But you know all along, oh, you can do it. You can say yes right now. But you may have to say, let me make a couple phone calls and I'll get back to you tomorrow. And by doing that, it sends signals that, you know, you have pushed me to the end and that I'm having to struggle to put this deal together. And it's just a way in which you can help the other side feel like they got a win. And it all has to do with kind of having good manners. But the irony of it is it's not saying yes and it's not being quick. It's actually slowing down and demonstrating a little struggle in terms of getting there.
So you talked about that you're now working with companies, organizations around AI. Talk yes. about just some of the things that you're seeing that's become such a hot topic in the last couple of years. But what do you see in around negotiation and the whole decision making? What role do you think AI will play in that?
Yeah, so it's been interesting. There's been lots of different attempts to apply technology to the negotiation process. And here's where I think AI and other technologies can make a huge difference. And that is helping people understand what is the right answer? And so, you know, using and applying AI in terms of, you know, market demographics and sales histories and all that kind of stuff to develop the value or the market value of a product, it's going to be transformational in that respect. Mm-hmm. And so I think in terms of the substance of negotiation, it will be very powerful and it'll be disruptive and it'll help in so many different ways. Where I think AI is limited, again, is this understanding that negotiation is human to human. And I don't know if you're going to be able to replace one of the humans with a machine, given the way that humans make decisions. And so, for example, business decisions, 70% of those decisions are based on emotion. And usually it has to do with ego in terms of people wanting to look good and needing to check that box before they move forward with a deal. For example, you know, that car dealership example I just shared with you, you know, what I walked into and what drove me through that entire process was the need to feel good about the deal. And you know, the dealership didn't pick up quick enough on that in terms of that was an abstract yet internal need that I have that drove all of my behavior through that entire negotiation. And I don't know if you're going to be able to set up a process to where a machine knows how to discover and then respond to some of those very personal and at times peculiar human needs that drive people in this process. They might be able to say, you know, based on all of the information and all of the data out there, here should be what this deal is. But at the end of the day, just because the machine said it doesn't mean I'm ready to do it. There may be some other things that are needed in terms of getting me to the place to where I'm ready to do that deal. And so the negotiation process has been around for, you know, ever since human civilization. And I think AI is going to impact it, but I don't think it's going to make it go away.
Definitely have, I know our time is coming to a close here with our conversation. Definitely encourage everybody to go pick up your book. And as I mentioned, Don Miller has mentioned that your book is in the top three business books of all time, which I think is a great compliment, and definitely encourage people to do that because it's something that everybody can use in their daily lives. So appreciate you writing it. And how would somebody learn more about what you do and your work?
Sure. So I think in terms of some of the management consulting stuff, go to thrivence.com. Lots of information there in terms of what we do in the leadership strategy in this AI space. As it relates to negotiation, if you want to become a better negotiator, go to lowrygroup.net. And there are lots of resources there in terms of online courses and other things that you can get your hands on. Negotiation Made Simple. You can buy it wherever you buy books. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever. And then there's also a podcast that I've done called Negotiation Made Simple as well. And you can listen to that anywhere that you stream your podcast. So lots of resources out there. And I just encourage people to kind of jump in and as part of 2024, make it a priority to become a better negotiator. Whatever it is that you do, you will become better at that by focusing on your negotiation skills. And there's not many things that are so universal to where it helps you in all the different roles that you have in life. But negotiation is one of those things to where you not only will become a better business person or whatever it professional, whatever it is that you do in that capacity, but you'll become a better parent and a better friend and a better volunteer and a better spouse and you name it. In those roles in life, this will help you as well. So I would encourage you to check out Negotiation Made Simple.
Thanks, John, and wish you continued success. And we'll have you back on with your next book that I'm sure you have in mind. You're probably recovering from the last round, but we'll look forward to the next one.
Sounds good. Well, really appreciate what you're doing, Mark, and all the resources that you're providing people. And thanks so much, and look forward to being on again sometime.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.